Make Me Smart is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Come on.
I'm not Washington cool enough. But I am Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we make today make sense in my non-Washington coolness.
Fair enough. I'm just non everywhere, not cool. Anyway, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. We will do the standard fare, a little bit of news, maybe a Make Me Smile, although full disclosure right at the top, I don't have one because ain't nothing made me smile today. And then we're going to go. So we will begin with the news. You want to start? You start. How about you start?
Sure. I thought it's not exactly like a today thing. It's more of an ongoing issue that I've been watching. Mm-hmm. And NBC had a story out, I guess it was a couple of days ago, just sort of highlighting the difference between how Afghan refugees and Ukrainian refugees are being treated in this country and really many other places. But here in the U.S. in particular, that, you know, the Afghan refugees, including many who worked with the United States during the war, have to go through this, you know, shortened process compared to many other people seeking asylum or mm-hmm. trying to become refugees coming into this country, but still not nearly as expedited as some of the Ukrainians coming into this country. And a lot of the people who worked with Afghans during the war are getting incredibly frustrated. And there are some interesting statistics in this piece I'm trying to pull down. So, for example, Afghans who want to try to come into the country who haven't made it there yet have to pay like an administrative fee of $575 to try to enter the U.S. on humanitarian grounds. Ukrainians don't have to pay that administrative fee. And for reference, the median annual per capita income in Afghanistan is about $400. Yeah. You can apply to get that fee waived, but there's no indication of how often that happens. And just a lot of the people, including many veterans who are working trying to get their former colleagues into this country, have really been complaining about that. Now, that's just the difference between Afghan refugees and people seeking asylum compared to Ukrainians, not even looking at all of the migrants coming from South America or Africa or other parts of the world who are trying to get into the country and who have an even longer process to try to gain entry. This also gets us to the ongoing fight over whether or not Title 42 is going to remain in place. And for a flashback there, Title 42 was this COVID-era restriction that basically said the United States could block people from coming into the country, even if they were seeking asylum, even if they were refugees, even if they felt like they were at risk because of the health concerns of the pandemic. And so this was something put into place during the Trump administration, and it was used to expel more than a million migrants at the southern border, according to the story in Politico. And the administration announced it was going to end the use of Title 42, and, you know, happens to have occurred around the time that they were getting a lot of flack for, you know, sort of speeding up the process of Ukrainian refugees while blocking lots of other, to be frank, brown people at the border. And so the administration said they were going to end Title 42. Lots of people on both sides of the aisle didn't like this idea. Democrats didn't want the optics of a surge in migrations just leading up to the midterms. Republicans generally were opposed to lifting it in general. But the Biden administration said that it was going to go ahead and do this anyway, end the use of Title 42 by May the 23rd. However, last week, a U.S. District Court in the Western District of Louisiana said that he would side with Republican states in keeping the order preserved. So that fight is still ongoing, but last week the Biden said it was going to comply. So I'm fascinated to see how this plays out. And I mentioned this on the podcast before, but for as much as people complain about the staffing shortage and the worker shortage in this country, I am often surprised how opposed people are to immigration.
Yeah. So look, immigration is a labor market story, first of all, right? It's just a huge freaking labor market story. But to your Title 42 point and the backing and forth thing that we've been doing now for generations about immigration in this society, I think immigration is even maybe more than national defense. I think immigration is the singular abdication of congressional responsibility policy issue that we've got in this country.
Say more about that.
So first of all, just writ large, Congress does not like to make decisions, right? Decisions made in running this economy, in running this society, in running our body politic are difficult. They're supposed to be difficult because we have many competing interests. But what Congress has done is said, oh, no, we're not doing anything except for letting the president figure it out. And then the president of either party gets dumped on by the other party while members of Congress go, oh, yeah, no, I don't like immigration, or I want more immigration, or whatever. But they singularly refuse to take a stand, right? And look, to say that it's an abdication of responsibility even greater than national security is quite something because, you know, we've been running for 22 years now on an authorization for the use of military force from September 11th that has gotten us in all kinds of trouble and has killed thousands of Americans. I have no stomach for Congress these days. Truly.
I gather that from talking to you.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Sorry.
But what's your news?
Anyway, that's what I think. Okay, two super quick and not at all immigration related things, but one labor market thing, which is this. Much talk in the last number of weeks and months about unionization drives. We've seen it at Starbucks. Also at Amazon, there was a big Amazon unionization win for the workers last month in New York. And now another one in Staten Island, has voted to not unionize by a vote of 2-1. And look, there's going to be revotes and all kinds of things because the lawyers will get involved, right? But because companies have a great deal of latitude under the NLRB rules, and because workers, I don't believe, are going to stop trying to unionize at Amazon. This story will go on, but it's Amazon's kind of one-on-one now. And it's just a thing we ought to watch because, as we've talked about many a time, unionization is not in gross numbers, but in perception and in trend on the rise. In this economy, especially since pandemic. So that's number one. Yes, what?
Well, I was trying to find, I'm not sure if it's in my Twitter DMs or if you know, Elon Musk has already snatched it or if it exists elsewhere. But somebody wrote me a while back asking, you know, if it mattered that these shops are unionizing one by one, like one Amazon warehouse at a time and one Starbucks as a time, and how that compares to labor movements of the past and does it make a difference? Maybe that's a deep dive we should do in the future. We can ask Megan.
That's actually a good one because, totally. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know the answer.
Neither do
I. But there are people out there who do. Yeah. That's a good one. All right, the other one, it's a little dorky, it's a little weedy, but the yield on the U.S. Treasury, yield on the U.S. Treasury note, the 10-year U.S. Treasury, hit 3.002 today. I don't usually take it out to the
tens, hundreds, thousands of a decimal place. Sorry, I had to count. I'm not a math guy.
Yeah, I was just double checking too on my fingers.
You got that part? It's yeah. But it's of note because it's the highest it's been in 3 years. We should say historically it's still really, really low. But here we are in a rising rate environment, right? On Wednesday, Jay Powell is going to come out of that meeting and say, ta-da, the federal funds rate, the rate that the Fed controls, is going up 0.5 percentage point. So interest rates are going to go up. 30-year fixed rate mortgage now, 5.5%. So that's what's happening. And the bond market is saying, oh, yeah, okay. Okay, we're going to send those yields up. So just, you know, a little timestamp, a little data point, I suppose. And that's my news.
In a very telling anecdote of my life, I was having a fascinating conversation with someone at a party on Saturday night about municipal bonds in this interest rate environment.
Ooh.
And I don't know what that says.
You
got to
get out
me.
More. That's the name of that game.
That's the worst part. I was out.
That's a fair point. That's a very fair point.
Yes, I guess that could
totally
be your make
true.
Me smile.
Totally true. Yeah, that's mine. All right. Well, as y'all can tell, I'm a little cranky today. So anyway, we'll do a little we'll do a little happy place there, Charlton, and then we'll move on. There we go. What you got, Ms. Adams?
Well, this was kind of like for you in many ways, since I saw that neither one of us had anything. But now I have to find my link again. So this was a story in the Associated Press, but linking to a academic journal from science about dogs and their traits. And so the headline is great. Your dog's personality may have little to do with its breed. And so the takeaway, yes, this is useful. The takeaway is the researchers surveyed more than 18,000 dog owners and analyzed the genomes of about 2,150 of their dogs to look for patterns. They found that some behaviors, such as howling, pointing, and showing friendliness to human strangers, do have at least some genetic basis, but that inheritance isn't strictly passed down along breed lines. So, for example, they found golden retrievers that don't retrieve.
Yes, oh my God. All right. So mine is true to breed. She retrieves like it's going out of style. Anyway, okay, go on.
Okay. Some breeds like Huskies and Beagles may show a greater tendency to howl, but many of these dogs don't, both the owner survey and genetic data showed. And the researchers, is a really key one, the researchers could find no genetic basis for aggressive behavior, nor a link to specific breeds, so stop picking on pit bulls.
Wow, yeah. Yeah, for sure, stop picking on pit bulls.
Yeah, pit bulls are so happy when they're loved. They have like the biggest smiles and happy faces. I love pit bulls.
Yeah, they can be good dogs.
They're so cute.
Good dogs.
Smiles. Pit bulls, great smiles. Make me smile. Boom. There we go. There
Excellent.
We go. Full circle.
Excellent. And there we go. Boom, done.
What about your
Nicely
other dog?
Done. Well, she's kind of a mutt. We kind of know. I mean, she's a little bit wiener dog. She's a little bit pug. She's a little standoffish. Does no retrieving. But she's around. She's 12. She's still hanging. Likes to bark, as listeners to this podcast have heard.
But Willow likes to retrieve, right?
Oh my goodness, yeah. It's crazy. When she was little, we would worry that we were wearing her out, right? We would just throw balls and balls, and she would go and go and go and be huffing and puffing. And we're like, all right, we got to stop. And she's like, no. And she drops the ball at her feet.
So it's like, let's go.
That's right. I'm like, no, man, it's not good for you. Anyway.
But it's good for you.
That's right.
And throw the ball for your dog, because that's it for today. We are going to be back tomorrow for a deep dive that Kai and I have really been wanting to do for a while now, talking all about the Federal Reserve's attempts, note I say attempts, pre-COVID to try to close the gap between black and white unemployment and what exactly happened to that effort and what's going to happen to that effort as interest rates continue to go up. So we hope you'll join us for that conversation. It's going to be really fascinating.
It's super important because last time I checked, black unemployment is like twice white unemployment in this economy. And it's as rates go up, it's not going to get any better. We'll just put it that way. Yeah. Good point. All right. So that's that. Tell us what you thought about today's show or anything else that crosses your mind. Questions for Wednesday or what have you. You can send us a voice memo or an email to makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can just call us. Leave a voice message there. 508-UB-SMART.
To add a oh yeah tag to the music. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe.
Our senior producer is Bridget Bodner, the director of On Demand around here. He's down at 10.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gotta go Bueller? Back and Anyone? Watch that Bueller? Movie.
Bueller? Anyone? I tried to get my kids to watch it the other day. Well, not the other day. Maybe
they will
a year
not
or two
appreciate
ago.
It.
They were having nothing to do with it. I was like, you guys, it's such a great film. Dad, it's boring. It's really stupid.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.